According to this calculation, there cannot be a just and omniscient God, since the living entity is forced to commit sinful activities by the reactions of his previous activities, which were reactions to still previous activities. Since even an ordinary gentleman will not unfairly punish an innocent person, how could there be a God witnessing the helpless suffering of the conditioned souls within this world? This foolish argument can easily be refuted by a practical example. If I purchase a ticket for an airline flight, board the plane and commence the flight, once the plane has taken off, my decision to board the plane forces me to continue flying until the plane lands. But although I am forced to accept the reaction of this decision, on board the plane, I have many new decisions I can make. I may accept the food and drink from the stewardesses or reject it. I may read a magazine or newspaper. I may sleep, walk up and down the aisles, converse with other passengers, and so on, and all hijack a plane. Sorry, thank you. In other words, although in general context, flying to a particular city is forcibly imposed upon me as a reaction to my previous decision to board a plane, even within that situation, I'm constantly making new decisions and creating new reactions. For example, if I cause a disturbance on the airplane, I may be arrested when the plane lands. On the other hand, if I make friends with a businessman sitting next to me on the plane, such a contact can lead to a favorable business transaction in the future. Similarly, although the living entity is forced to accept a particular body by the laws of karma, within the human form of life, there is always scope for free will and decision-making. Therefore, the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be considered unjust for holding the living entity in human life responsible for its present activities. despite the living entities undergoing the reactions of his previous work. According to Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the influence of Maya is so strong that even in a hellish condition, the proud conditioned soul thinks that he is enjoying Maya. Kamani Kamati Kuvan Sani Tali Dehabrik Tata Kama Phalam Grinam Brahmakiha Sukhetram. Impelled by deep rooted material desires, the embodied living entity engages his active sense organs in fruitive activities. He then experiences the result of his material actions by wandering throughout this world in so called happiness and distress. Om Agyanati Mandasya Tilanjana Salakya Rakshu Maritam Yena Tasmai Shri Garudema Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Tasyakale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nityanamne Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Chayane Nivasesa Sanyavadi Pasachandi Shatayane. If you draw a line, the horizontal line, there are people who live above the line and people who live below the line. Those who live below the line, they play the blame game. And those above the line is called learning. Because you find in every situation that one finds himself in, you can blame or you can learn. There are lessons to be learned. Sometimes setbacks, when we face certain setbacks, we tend to very quickly blame someone. Oh, it's because of this person that I'm in this situation. He put me in this situation. He put me in that situation. Or it's because of my circumstances. Oh, Prabhu, you don't understand. If you understand my upbringing, you will understand why I'm behaving the way I'm behaving. Oh, it's because of the school system, because of the society, because of this, because blah, 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 on and on and on. Deferring taking responsibility and just pushing the responsibility to someone else. Not taking personal responsibility. Sound familiar? So this is very common in society. And such people never learn. Actually, many of these lessons that we face in life, or many situations we face in life, actually learn lessons to be learned to help us to become better. We are faced with in a particular situation, especially in a negative situation, because of ignorance, lack of understanding. Therefore, we find ourselves in an unfavorable situation. So that unfavorable situation is meant to help us to learn, to correct ourselves. But if one is too busy blaming, every time we blame someone or blame circumstances, we miss an opportunity to learn something. Life is full of lessons, so many lessons. And some people they call it the proactive or the reactive. The reactive people, they tend to blame and not take personal responsibility. They always have a chip on the shoulder. They are always perfect. I'm never wrong. So such people are always in delusion about themselves. Always blaming others. On the other hand, someone, maybe yes, this person may have done this, this person may have done that, and so on and so forth, but what is my contribution to this present situation? And what can I do otherwise? And how can I avoid this unfavorable situation in the future? So that lesson to be learned. So as the example pointed out here, sometimes people blame the same thing. They blame others, they blame God. They cannot blame God. If there is a God, why am I in this suffering condition? God is supposed to be the loving Father. Why would he allow me to be in this suffering condition? Why did he allow this war to go on? And so on, so many so-called innocent children are starving. So many innocent women and children, they also been killed. They are not they have no say in these conflicts, and how come they all have to suffer? How can God be so cruel? And this is because they do not understand this law of karma. Every action brings a reaction. Whatever we are experiencing in life now is due to previous actions. And in the Nectar of Devotion is explained there are different kind of karma. Some karmas are already fructified, some karma are about to be fructified, and some karma still in seed form waiting to be fructified. Just like we look at sometimes children, but after we see children old, so innocent. And they're very innocent. Senses are not very developed yet, the mind is not very developed. But then when you reach a certain age, when the senses become developed, then all the previous material desires will start to manifest more and more and more. And sometimes you wonder why. Oh, this is such an innocent child then turned into such a rascal. how did that happen? So the karma that is already manifested, there's nothing you can do about it. You're born in a certain country, you're born in a certain family, you're born with certain body features. Not everyone can be a Miss Australian or Miss India, or Mr. Australia, for that matter. And not everyone is born with big brains. So we all born in different circumstances, with different bodies. There's nothing you can change. Although some people try to do that. They go for surgery. Nose that I'm born with is not good enough. So I go for surgery and reshape my nose. My eyes don't look so good, too Chinese looking. So I'm going to make it bigger, double eyes. My cheekbones is too prominent, maybe I'll decrease it. In this way, they reshape, try to reshape. And some people even go so far, I don't like the dark skin. It's very funny actually. Westerners, when they go on holiday, they go and bake in the sun, become like baked potatoes. And those who are born where the sun is, they stay away from the sun. It's very funny. So we have one very famous personality. He didn't like his skin color, so he bleached it. He went through so many different operations and surgery to reshape his face and skin and everything. And then suddenly his nose started falling off. You know what I'm talking about? Huh? You know what I'm talking about? Very famous personality whose nose started falling and become like almost like a mutant. So you can act against nature, but there are always reaction. And sometimes now people they put Botox. Yeah. Who knows what kind of reaction will come from that? And to look younger, to make the face more elastic. So they try, but there's nothing much you can do about it because it's already karma, it's already manifested. One just has to accept it. Some people are born deformed. But there are a lot of things one can still do. So all this argument that, because of my past reaction, because of my past karma, now I'm forced into a situation, I'm born in a family of drug addicts, and I'm not given a chance in life. I never had a chance in life. Again, they all blame. But we have seen, we have read in history, so many great personalities that come out from a very unfavorable situation. In fact, we read about so many successful people, at least materially speaking, very successful people. They come from very poverty background, isn't it? But somehow they do not accept blame. They take their life, take responsibility for their life and carve something out of it. So, when we are blaming, what we are doing actually, we're just trying to hide from reality, hide from the facts. First of all, we just have to accept that No one else but me. Me. I put myself in this situation. It is because of my ignorance, because of my past activities, I end up in this situation with a material body. And as long as we have this material body, there will be material desires pushing us. So, someone who is devoid of transcendental knowledge, when he's pushed by a material desire, he feels that he has to act according to those desires. Because the psychology, the psychiatrist told them, it's not good to suppress a desire. Just let it out. Because if you suppress a desire, you will have so many mental problems, so you have to just let it out. Become like an animal. That's what animals do. Animals, they just act according to their instinct. They just act according to their desire. But human beings have intelligence, and the function of intelligence is to discriminate what is right, what is wrong, what is good, what is bad. So there may be so many desires, like the Bhagavad Gita has stated. There's so many streams that are coming into the pond. But for the self-realized soul, it remains a good place. So I know there may be so many desires coming in, and an intelligent person will sort it out. What is good, what is bad. It's not that one has to act on every impulse of the senses and the mind. But as long as we do not take that responsibility and accept the fact that it's because of my past activities I'm in this situation, one will continuously engage in sense gratification, engage in sinful activities, and again taking birth. Therefore, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in his instructions to his sons, Vishvavishap, they say that Nunam pramatta purute vikama ya indriya kutraya aprimanti na sāramanye yat atmanoyam asāmi kreshada āśadeya. He said, when a person considers sense gratification the aim of life, he suddenly becomes mad after materialistic living and engages in all kinds of sinful activity. He does not know that due to his past misdeeds, he has already received a body which, although temporary, is the cause of his misery. Actually, the living entity should not have taken on a material body, but he has been awarded a material body for sense gratification. Therefore, I think it not befitting an intelligent man to involve himself again in the activities of sense gratification, by which he perpetually gets material bodies one after another. So Lord Vishwadev very clearly said here that it's because of one's sinful activities that he's getting this material body. And therefore I say it's not befitting that because of our sinful activities you get this material body, and again we engage in sinful activities, again we get this material body and become a passion. It's called samsara. That's why Srila Prabhupada used the word the stringent law of nature. Very stringent. Once we get caught into the most of material nature, or by the most of material nature, one gets entangled. Very, very difficult to get out. Isn't it sometimes children, when they play with glue when they go to school, right? They can get all sticky. And then they get something in their nose, and then they start scratching, they get more sticky, and then they start rubbing here, rubbing there. And before you know it, glue is all over the place. Or they take this candy floss. Everyone knows this candy floss? They suck on it and they get very sticky, and then they rub here and they rub there. Before you know it, it's all candy all over the place. They get complete entangled. And the more they rub, the more entangled they become. You know, like a quicksand. When you get in a quicksand, the more you struggle, the quicker it gets sunk in. So this is the stringent law of nature. Once one gets caught up by the most of material nature, he feels that he has to act according to this nature. He don't feel that he has a choice. And that is the illusion of Maya. As we mentioned previously, the Maya has two potencies. You pull one down and the cover one over. So when one is Maya or influenced by the most of material nature, he feels that he has no choice. He feels that he has to act according to the dictation of the most of material nature. Even for devotees, sometimes they get influenced by the most of nature and they feel that
Bro, you just don't understand. I'm a Maya. I just have to do it.
And the other devotee says,
no, you don't have to. I have to.
Is that it? This is how powerful the Muslim attention. This is how powerful the Maya is in the energy of Krishna. Therefore, it's not surprising that when one is caught up in this Muslim nature, it's very, very difficult to overcome. And sometimes we question ourselves, even ourselves. I mean, what produced chitta? What kind of activities, sacrifices that we have performed to have this great fortune to understand the nature of this material world, the nature of the spiritual world, and this opportunity to engage in devotional service? So one time, one devotee, he asked Srila Prabhupada. He said, you know, from our background, we come from, I mean, how did we have this fortune to be engaged in Krishna consciousness? What great fortune. And Srila Prabhupada just smiled, very humbly said, I created the fortune. Prabhupada created the fortune for us. And that is the reality. Otherwise, what hope, what chance does people have when they're so covered by the most of material nature? Do you even think, people don't even think about getting out of this most of material nature. They think this is normal. This is normal in life. They turn around and say, you devotees are abnormal. You are not acting in a normal way. But actually, we are the real normal people. They are the abnormal. So unless they are given some fortune, what hope do they have of getting out of the conscious samaya? Absolutely no hope. So by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, by the arrangements of Srila Prabhupada, and by his instruction, devotees are going out trying to create fortune in the lives of others. Maybe in the form of prasadam, maybe in the form of books, in the form of public programs, in so many ways, just trying to create some fortune in people's life. You have no idea. Like prasadam. Prasadam is our secret weapon. Everyone loves prasadam. Some time back I told you about this story of experience I had. We were doing a rock festival. It was one of the biggest rock festivals in the Northern Hemisphere. It was in Denmark, just outside Copenhagen. So about 90 to 100,000 people came for that 2 or 3 months program, two or three days program. So we had a big truck, and we were just cooking non-stop from 10 in the morning until 10 in the night, just non-stop cooking, khichdi and halwa. Then I was mingling around talking to the guests, and there was this one young dame, like right normal dame, pretty puffed up, pretty full of himself. So he was arguing with me and challenging me and said, why are you distributing free food here? You think in Denmark we are so poor we don't have food to eat? Why do you distribute this free food to people in Africa and other places? And I tried to be saying, I said, we are also doing that, we have free food distribution all over the world, everywhere. And he was arguing, you should not be distributing free food here, because nobody is going hungry here. We have welfare system. If you are hungry, you don't have money, just go to the welfare and get money. Save your money and distribute to the poor people who need it. He just keep going and he was not listening to logic. He was holding a plate. And then I turned to him, I said, look, if this is a problem, then give me back the plate. I'll give it to someone who needs it. He's holding, no, you should not waste your money. Holding back, whatever, keep going, no? And so this guy's hopeless, you know. Makes an excuse and I went on. And he was eating, and then after a while I was watching and he was standing in the line for seconds. So much for his logic and argument.
You see, when you get paid for shining gates of poop, all your so-called knowledge just flies out of your arm. I thought that was really funny. So people are knowing they're taking Vishara, and that's creating fortune in their mind. We might never know when it's going to happen. The purification is taking place. Devotional service, they already given, engaged in devotional service by taking Vishara. And especially now, sometimes when people come to Crossway, they argue, say, no, I'll pay. They get extra benefit. They're paying for someone's prasada. They get so much good fortune out of that. So in this way, the devotees create fortune in the mind of others. And so much so that even though what we grow up can be traded to sense gratification, one is heavy traders to engage in sinful activities, and the mercy of the pure devotees, and by the association of the pure devotees, one can break the cycle of repeated birth and death. One can break the cycle of perpetual sense gratification and material bodies. Tell you about one story, true story. In the early days, back in 1967, Srila Prabhupada instructed one of the early disciples, Sevasundar, to carve a deity of Jagannath. Because they found this one small deity, and they said, yes, they carved the deity of Jagannath. It was, I think it was a carpenter or whatever. So he was carving Jagannath deities in his room, but he has one bad habit, which he could not give up. He could not give up smoking. So he had a packet of cigarette on top of Balaram's cave, while he was smoking, while he was carving the deities of Jagannath. Can you imagine that? And one day, Prabhupada wanted to see how the progress of the carving of the deities. So he walked into the room and saw smoking and carving. And Prabhupada said, what is this? And then the pair of cigarettes fell on the floor. And Prabhupada came with his foot of it, came just push it away. And the Prabhupada smiled and looked at him and said, do you really want this one stick of tobacco to come between you and Krishna? Just one simple statement. You really want this one stick of tobacco to come between you and Krishna? That's all he said. And then within a week or so, he actually gave up smoking. That was enough. Now, I don't know you, but I've heard of people who smoke. It's incredibly difficult to give up smoking. I've met people who have tried to give up smoking so many times and just couldn't do it. At the same time, I see people who come and take prasada after a few times, they actually give it up. And they told me, say, you know, I've been trying to give up smoking for years, and I cannot even count how many times I tried to give up smoking. After coming here taking prasada, I just gave it up without any problem. I just gave it up. It's the power of devotional service. Param Jiswani Bhakti. By getting a higher case. We cannot give up, we cannot suppress desire, that's true, yes. I want to transform those desires. This Krishna conscious movement is not a movement of suppressing. It's a movement for transformation. Transforming material desires into spiritual desires. Transforming material activities into spiritual activities. We eat. But we eat food. Food stuff is cooked and offered to Krishna. Become Krishna. Not just being vegetarian. And sometimes people may be proud and say, I'm a vegetarian. And Prabhupada said, your monkeys are also vegetarian. That's especially vegetarian. In fact, some of these biggest animals are vegetarian. Elephants are vegetarian. The gorillas are vegetarian. The hippopotamus are vegetarian. I mean, these are huge, strong animals. And how can they say vegetarians are weaklings and moose strain and not enough? So we are not just vegetarian.
We are prasadam.
So it's matter of transformation
of the heart.
It's not just a matter of changing name, not a matter of changing dress, changing this and changing that. The most important thing that has to happen is a change of heart.
Change in the heart.
We come to understand it that I'm not God. I'm not the controller. I'm not the enjoyer. What can I control? How much can I control? Not much. There's a lot of things we cannot control. What we can control is so minuscule, so infinitesimal, it's ridiculous to even consider the fact that we are controllers. Enjoyer in this body? Are you kidding me? You think we are an enjoyer, the supreme enjoyer in this body, which is full of miseries? In fact, this material body is a temple of suffering. Just look at us. We sit down, trying to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, but then we're moving here, moving there. Uncomfortable. If we sit too long one side, then the blood starts flowing there, we can move it this side, and then we move it that side. And we scratch here, and we stick there, and we fall asleep, and so it's constantly, we are making adjustments to try to make the body comfortable. And we think of ourselves as a supreme enjoyment. So we are not. So we neither the controller nor the enjoyer. So when we understand that and accept that Krishna is actually the supreme enjoyer, the supreme controller, then our path of enlightenment begins. So that's when we start transforming our life. If you don't understand, why should one think of transforming his life? Like the materialist, they have no idea about God. Even though they claim to be belonging to a certain religion or whatever, they have no understanding. It's very easy, yes, I believe, I accept. But there's no transformation in their life. There's no change. It's business as usual. The habits remain the same. In Krishna consciousness, we are actually transforming mind. And it started off in the 60s when Srila Prabhupada came to America. How he transformed the hippies from hippies to hippies. These are miracles. And sociologically, I don't know whether we all understand what really means to be hippie. A hippie usually come from middle class, upper middle class, or upper class family. They come from well-to-do family. Very, very rare you find a hippie coming from some lower income group. Usually they're coming from high income group, where they have everything they can ask for in life. They have television, they have record player, they have cars, a nice house for living, good income from the family. But they rejected it all. They said, this is not purpose of life, there must be something more. And so I start experimenting with drugs, free sex, anything goes. And this was the culture that Srila Prabhupada came to. A 70-year-old man, a gentleman, very aristocratic, learned. Someone of very high communicable spiritual standard. And he came in the midst of this decadent society where men, boys and girls mix freely, meeting, all kinds of intoxication taking place in the name of spiritual realization and experiences. And Prabhupada came right in the middle of it all and transformed them. One time, someone asked Prabhupada, he said, you are a guru, can you perform miracle? So what one miracle they want to see? That transforms hippies into happies. That transforms this, all these devotees here, come from military background, young background, addicted to sense gratification,
addicted to sin practices. But look at them. Look at them now. They will not even touch any of this. They have given up meat eating, given up intoxication, illicit sex, gambling. Isn't that a miracle? That's a miracle. So many other so-called gurus, they come to the West and they preach. What have they done? Did they transform any life? No. No life was transformed. Nobody changed. They didn't have that potency. Why didn't they have that potency? Because they were not carrying the message and the doctrine message. They changed. But Srila Prabhupada, a firm faith in the potency of the Holy Name. So, yeah. Firm faith that when you deliver the Holy Name, when people chant the Hare Krishna mantra, their life will change. Their habits will change. They will be purified. So it is not that Krishna has left the conditioned soul in this material world, the struggling, suffering in this material world with the three most material nature, and just left them. No. He came in different incarnations. He sent his representative to come to spread Yuga Dharma. In this age, Yuga Dharma is the chanting of the Holy Name. So Krishna is doing something. Although he may not directly interfere with the independence of the living entity, but his representative do not have such hesitation. Because they understand. They understand the mood of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They go about interfering with the life of the people. And sometimes people think the challenges have gone on preaching. Why are you imposing this on us? Why are you imposing this on us? We're not imposing. What we're doing is that we are sharing this information. If they have any problem with imposing, then they should shut down the television station. They should shut down all this advertising agency. Shut down all these billboards. Shut down all these advertisements in the newspaper. That is imposing. That's what all these advertisements are doing. That's imposing on us with this idea. If you don't have this, you're going to miss out. I was influenced this way as a teenager. Maybe not so much teenager, but in my early 20s. That is cool to smoke. In those days they have this advertisement that is so cool, especially when they advertise for Marlboro. You know, there is this cool guy on the horse, you know, cowboy. And that was so cool. I hated smoking. But I had to have a pack with me. And my pack, practically gave away everything. Maybe out of the whole pack, I just put one or two sticks. And then I gave it. I'm cool, no? I've got a pack of shit in my butt pocket. And it's just true. You don't like it. But you have to be cool. And then later I thought, how can it be so cool? Smoke, inhaling all the smokes into your body. How can that be cool? Never figured it out, but somehow this is what you're supposed to do, you know? And just all this stuff, you just screw up our brain, that if you don't have, you're missing out on something in life. And this way, distracting us from the real goal of life. Distracting us from what is really important in life. So much so, that when the devotee come along, and say, oh, chant Hare Krishna, people chant. What are you talking about? Nothing to do with what the advertisement says. My gurus. All my gurus are telling me I should smoke, and I should drink this beer, or this liquor, and I should wear these jeans, and I should wear especially sport jeans, branded names. And all my gurus are telling me to do something different than what you're telling me to do. I will have to listen to my gurus. They are my acharyas. So in this way,
and the thing of the seventh independence, he said, because if I follow you, Hare Krishna, I have no independence. I'm a free thinker. I'm an independent-minded person. I cannot accept guru. But at the same time, accepting all these gurus, telling them what to do all the time. So this is just to show how deluded people are. They have no connection to reality. They think one thing and then act something else. They cannot see clear. So when someone who is a bit open-minded, and when they read Bhagavad Gita, they read Srimad Bhagavatam, immediately the mind opens up and say, hey, it makes sense. It makes a lot of sense. Isn't it? How many of us here that we have questions? Although we go about following the parampara system of the material world, now that's passed down from our families, the parampara, the disciple succession. But somehow it's digging down in our mind, is there something else? But there is no answers. And when you read Bhagavad Gita, you say, wow, the answers are right here. Who has that experience? So few? About half. It's kind of just like a light bulb just opened up and said, wow. It makes so much sense. It's so clear. This is far. And that's an amazing effect. This is the potency of these books. This is the potency of this knowledge that Srila Prabhupada has given us. It opens up people's mind. That's why the Srimad Bhagavatam is stated that this Srimad Bhagavatam will cause a revolution in the heart of man. In the heart of man in this Kali Yuga. A revolution. So we used to be very revolutionary in the 70s and 80s when we joined. We joined with that revolutionary spirit. We're going to change the world. We're going to conquer the world. These books are going to change the world. These books are going to cause a revolution in this world and all these things. And then we really humble. Of course, after some time, then we realize and say, we've got to change ourselves first. The revolution has to start here in our own heart. Then we can cause revolution in the heart of our people. Our revolution is not with guns and bombs and missiles. This is our weapon. The holy name is our weapon. Prasadam is our weapon. The three ankars of the Sankirtan movement is our holy name, the Srimad Bhagavatam, and our prasadam. This is an important message. Sorry. So, although it seems like there's no way out once one gets caught in the grip of Maya, one should at least have this understanding that there is a way out. When one is in the grip of Maya, one actually feels helplessness, he feels hopelessness, that it does no hope. And that's what my good words is completely covered stuff that we cannot see things logically anymore. That's why the association and the blessings of devotees are so important. Because when one is involved in the situation, he just sees it like that. Right? So sometimes you need someone who is a bit distant from it. Who is not directly involved in the situation, a bit distance from it, can see things in a different perspective, in a broader perspective, and point out to us and say, no, our goal is Maya. You don't have to do this. You don't have to jump off the roof. Right? You don't, what you're trying to do, you think you're in trouble, but what you're trying to do is jumping from the frying pan into the fire. It's hot. You feel the heat of material nature. And if you jump out of this, you'll be cooler. Then you finally just even hotter into the fire. So when you get deluded, then it's very difficult. Delusion means you don't have
realistic idea of ourselves.
Maybe sometimes, very often we think due to pride, puffed up, we think I'm more advanced than I actually am. We think that I'm more together than I really am. Or I'm so fixed up than I really am. And when we're in that situation, very difficult to be helped. Cannot be helped. I've seen sometimes devotees, they're so close up in themselves, they lock themselves up, they use not possible to reach them. Or they want to shun them. Go ahead. Nobody can reach them. They just close up and they're not hearing, they're not listening to anyone. They're not taking advice from anyone. Or sometimes they pretend to listen. And then in their mind, they process it according to the way they want to see it. So that is also a problem. So we have to get out of this illusion and at least have the understanding of where we really are. That as long as I miss the pure body, and as long as I miss the pure world, there's danger every time. A danger every step. I should not feel so overly confident that I'm fine, I'm okay, I don't need anyone. Rather, we should feel and think that I need all the mercy I can give. All the mercy, doesn't matter if big mercy, small mercy. I need all the mercy and it ends up. I want to add up so much that by the time, at the time of death, I have 100% full mercy. What if I rejected a few small mercies and at the time of death I missed out on 0.1%? So you want to have as much mercy as possible from the devotees, because the devotees can transform our life. Only the devotees can help us transform our life. No one else. And only the devotees can help us break out of this perpetual cycle of birth and death, and birth and death, and birth and death. We may be so proud of our independence, but most of the time we're just misusing our independence. Look at what our independence has brought us. Repeat the birth and death. So what's so great about this independence? Instead, we should just surrender our independence at the lotus feet of the spiritual master. I give up. Just like Arjuna. Arjuna was arguing with Krishna. How can you ask him to fight? How can you ask him to act against religious principles? If I kill, all these men are killed, women are unprotected. And when women are unprotected, then there will be a Vanashankara. And one children will be born and whole society will go to hell. And then how can you ask me to kill my teacher, my grandfather, personalities that I'm supposed to respect? Give me all kinds of arguments. And then in the end he just realized and said, I'm still doing it. Despite all my so-called learned, intelligent arguments, I'm still bewildered, I'm still doing it. He came to his senses and said, now, Krishna, I surrender to you. You please instruct me. Please tell me what to do. So we surrender our independence to the lotus feet of the spiritual masters and ask, please instruct me. Please tell me what to do. By the way, this is what I would like to do and this is what I would like to do. So please instruct me to do this and that. I've seen devotees like that. Very simple. Guru Maharaj, a fully surrendered to you. Please tell me what to do. And actually, I have some idea that this is what I want to do. Is it alright? What kind of surrender is that? So even if other devotees approach it, Sri Chaitanya says, can you please give a name for my newborn son? And actually this is the name that me and my wife has chosen. Well, that's not surrender. Surrender means surrender. A gun to your head. Ba 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 ba. No gun. Just go. Straight. This way. Left, right, left, right, straight. That's for surrender. And then once we are surrendered and receive the instruction, does that mean we shut off our intelligence? No, then we apply our intelligence. Apply our free will in carrying out an instruction. That's how it works. Free will is always there. At every moment we always have free will. Every moment we always have a choice. Every moment in our life is a moment of truth. We can always choose to go this way or to go that way. To choose Krishna or to choose surrender Maya. Always, at every moment we always have this choice. So the idea, the whole thing about Krishna conscious movement and association is to put ourselves in a situation whereby we will be at least most of the time, at least in our early stage of devotion, most of the time we're making the right choice of surrendering to Krishna. And any time we make a wrong choice, we should bring ourselves back in hope. Sorry, hope. Back. So this is how we apply our free will. Are there any questions or comments? Yes.
The airport analogy you showed, the ability to associate with good people is also from the good karma which we have accumulated from the previous life.
Yes. So
how exactly is the free will helping us?
Well, like the example given here, there's always two things going on simultaneously. Like every situation you find yourself in is because of your past activities. But within that situation, you always have the free will to choose how you're going to react to it. Right? By your choice or whatever your choice is, you end up in a company, working in a company. It's your choice. So it's, you can say it's a reaction. Right? And they go out for the dinner. You put yourself in a company and now you end up in a dinner. What are you going to do? So you're going to a dinner where you have a choice. Free will. You eat meat or take prasadam or vegetarian. It's the same dinner. And in any situation there's always a choice. People who say, I have no choice. It also shows in the language that they use. I have to do this. I must do this. No. When you say I have to, I must, it implies that there's no choice. But there's always choice. There's one person. He was a Holocaust survivor, a Jew. His whole family was killed in the camp, but somehow he was kept alive. And he said, the only way I kept myself alive and sane is by always thinking of my situation when I was in my family and what I'm going to do when I'm released. Keep my sanity. And from his time in the concentration camp, he developed an understanding, he wrote a book about it, that between impetus and action, there's always a choice. Sometimes it seems like there's no choice, but there's always a choice. You can always choose how you want to react to any given situation. And that reaction is based on your understanding, based on your knowledge, your understanding, your experience, and also your desire to influence it. How you want to react. Just like on book distribution, devotees want. I'm using the example of book distribution, could be a little more often now, coming to the marathon. Someone stands there sitting to you. you're trying to destroy the books, they said something nice to you. Now, the natural reaction is to be angry,
wrathful,
nonsense, and you get upset. So by being upset, what happens? Your consciousness becomes polluted. The mind becomes disturbed. And it becomes more difficult to continue destroying books because you carry the anger in your mind and heart. And that anger is carried on to the next person, and to the next person, to the next person. So a seasoned distributor control his reaction. Alright. Yes? Thank you very much. And he said thank you very much for the smile. And he's carrying a smile and he's carrying a nice consciousness to the next person he's meeting. He chose how to react to an unfavorable situation. Understand? So, when the devotee of materialism, everyone has free will. Maybe because of the situation that you put into, or you get hurt, and you get the consequence because of your karma, how you react to the situation is the free will, which will create future karma. But because people are not trained, they have no knowledge, they perpetually make wrong choices with their free will, and perpetually caught up in weak karmic activities, sinful activities, which entangle them in the material world. Any other questions or comments? Okay. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.